Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we are ready to wrap up the month of May. Today, Wednesday, May 31st, 2023. And this one will go into the record books, Tom, as the first May since 2019 where we did not hit 100 degrees in Tucson. And I, for one, will take that.
I think we all will. And tomorrow, June 1st, could be an interesting June 1st.
Why is that?
It looks like it may not even hit 90 tomorrow.
Wow.
And that would be the first time in 30 years or some period of time since that's happened in June.
Since modern record keeping was.
Probably.
All right. The Buckmaster Show in our 13th year broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. Worldwide live listening. Anywhere you're near a computer, you can hear the program. BuckmasterShow.com. We piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. And our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line up to the Valley of the Sun. And Will Humble, who is the Buckmaster Show contributor on public health, and he certainly knows that area very well. He is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will's 30 years in public health included more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. And you can follow Will on his blog on Twitter. Hey, Will, how are you?
Good morning, or good afternoon, Bill. I'm doing just fine. How about you?
Doing well, yeah. Trying to readjust after all that heat and humidity in Puerto Rico and other places in the Caribbean. Very, I don't want to say stifling, but, well, I will say it. Some days were really stifling. You know how that goes. You got back from a trip to, I think you stopped in Panama and then went on to South America.
Yeah, we were in Cartagena, Colombia, and then in Paraguay, Asunción, but we went all around the different places in Paraguay, off to the east, over to Brazil. It was about 2 weeks, really, really nice.
Hey, Will, what's up with this near record number of drug shortages, especially hard, the chemotherapy drugs? Is this just a supply side issue with supply chain, or is there something deep here?
So there's a bunch of different shortages. Well, there's always shortages, but there's an acute shortage of a particular drug that's really used a lot for chemotherapy called carboplatin, and it's in generic forms. There's five different manufacturers of it, but they all relied on a single sort of raw material source provider. And it looks to me, I did a little investigation before this, that company who supplied the raw materials had some regulatory problems with the FDA and had to make some corrections and ended up shutting one of the plants down, which created kind of a nationwide shortage. So the answer to your question is yes. For the carboplatin, it's a supply chain, but not for the drug itself, but one of the raw materials that's required to make the drug. And apparently they're just, you know, the system was overly dependent on one facility that supplies the raw materials.
But generally they are making some of these generics and are becoming a little harder to find. There's just not the money in it, I guess, for the pharmaceutical companies, Will.
Well, you know, you're onto something there. I mean, you know, the drug companies make a lot of money on the drugs before they go generic. And so you see a lot of research in antidepressant type of drugs, things like that, you know, because the money, the research and development follows the money, and there's a lot of money to be made. And, you know, drugs, if you can get them patented and licensed, you know, you've got some years before it becomes a generic. And, you know, the system in many ways serves us well because we do have a lot of different drugs that are available, you know, for lots of different conditions, but you know, there's problems with it too.
Well, I want to turn to Arizona and the state budget. We had on the former Secretary of State, he's now a state senator, Ken Bennett, was with us yesterday on the program, and we were talking about this is a really interesting year that the budget, normally the way it works, as you know, Will, the budget is signed and then the session ends. That didn't happen this time. We had a budget, but then the Senate and the House went into a recess, and they're going to be coming back in a couple of weeks. But as far as the state budget and public health, could you give us an overview, please?
Well, it's pretty simple. The biggest, and I think most important new investment that will help public health is $150 million that went into what's called the Housing Trust Fund. And it's a fund that's been around for a long time, but is always starved for cash. And during the budget negotiation cycle, many of the legislators, you know, they were given a certain amount of money that they could put towards different projects. Some of them chose tax credit refunds, and others chose things like the Housing Trust Fund. And for the first time in my memory, we've got a substantial amount of money in that Housing Trust Fund, which then can be used to both draw down additional federal funds to create more affordable housing. Now, it's not going to solve the affordable housing crisis in Phoenix and Tucson and a lot of other places in the state, but it is an acute public health issue. Just, you know, if you can't make ends meet because you can't afford rent or, you know, housing, then that's a public health issue. So that Housing Trust Fund money isn't going to solve the affordable housing crisis. We need some policy changes at the local level to do that, to help with that. But it's a big, I would say that's really the only thing in the budget worth talking about. There was a little ticky-tack sort of initiatives inside the budget, but really housing for me was really the main thing.
But you don't think it's going to make a big difference?
Well, it'll make a difference, but it's not. What I mean to say is it's not going to solve this affordable housing crisis that we have. It's going to help. So, you know, but it's not going to solve it. But it will most certainly would have continued to get worse, or would have been worse, without this investment in the Housing Trust Fund. And the Arizona Department of Housing is the steward of that money, and I know they're working with cities, towns, other stakeholders, and making sure they draw down as much federal money as they can. But it's limited as to what they can actually accomplish, because, in my opinion, many of the issues that cause the housing affordability crisis is local zoning issues that prevent multifamily housing going into a lot of places because of the NIMBY effect, you know, the not in my backyard factor, where people don't want multifamily housing near them, and they'll use traffic or different reasons for that. But I don't think we're going to make huge progress until we can get some consensus around, building a better network of regulations for housing. And the Vitalist Health Foundation, by the way, is working to build sort of a template zoning regulation that cities could use off the shelf that would alleviate some of this NIMBY effect, which is prohibiting, you know, more dense housing in some of these cities because cities have these ordinances in place. And I'm saying something that the City League of Cities and Towns is going to be doesn't agree with, but the fact is, you know, local zoning issues are a problem.
How about red light, banning red light cameras? Is that a public health issue?
Well, it would have been. The governor vetoed the bill. So this is a bill that came through the Senate. It was a Senate sponsored by Wendy Rogers in the Senate. And it passed through the House and Senate. It would have prohibited cities from using photo radar for speeding and photo red lights. Now, if you look at the research, there is not a whole lot of research to suggest that photo speed cameras save lives. There is really good evidence that photo red light cameras save lives, especially preventing those violent T-bone intersection crashes that put people in the hospital and kill people. Now, I will say it won't matter in Tucson because you have an ordinance down there that prevents that in the city of Tucson. So you don't have red lights, cameras, and speed cameras, as far as I know, down there. But there are a lot of cities that are taking advantage of that. And it would have been, I think, a problem had the governor not vetoed that bill.
All right. When we continue with Will Humble, we'll be talking about a couple of things, additional things. One thing about the bill separating the state hospital from the Arizona Department of Health Services. We've talked about the state hospital. We'll talk with Will about that. Any update there right after the break on the Buckmaster Show. But first, a quick word about Mona's Danish Bakery. Mona's open Tuesday through Saturday at 6:30 in the morning. They open at 7 o'clock Sunday, and people are waiting in line. I don't blame them. They want the first choice there at that wonderful bakery case, and they want the best selection. Mona'sDanishBakery.com, the website. Open right now for lunch, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Will Humble right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com. Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show on the final day of May in 2023. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our live line presentation today is supported by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. With us on the live line for his monthly contribution, our contributor on public health and the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, former agency director at the Arizona Department of Health Services, Will Humble. Will, we've talked before about the Arizona State Hospital, and there was some effort to see if it would be separated from the Arizona Department of Health Services. Is that going to happen?
Well, the bill is still alive and still out there. And as you mentioned earlier, the legislature went on hiatus after the bill, after the budget got signed. So the bill is just waiting for a final vote in the House of Representatives, and then it would go to Governor Hobbs for her signature or veto, depending on how she feels about it. Just a quick sort of primer on it. The Arizona State Hospital is an inpatient psychiatric hospital that's actually been around since territorial days, back in the 1880s. And it's the most intensive level of psychiatric care that we have in the state. The problem that we have is that that hospital is run by the Arizona State Department of Health Services, but also regulated by the State Department of Health Services, which creates a conflict of interest. And that's something that I've been trying to resolve for a long time, to get rid of this conflict of interest so that it can be regulated more honestly, and that we are not just dependent on the character of the state agency director to ensure that real honest to goodness health and safety standards are upheld in that psychiatric facility. So I hope it gets through and that the governor signs it. I know there are people who oppose that as well, though.
Why would they oppose it?
You know what? I went to a stakeholder meeting and I couldn't get anybody to really articulate an honest to goodness reason why it was a bad idea to separate these two entities. I do know there are a bunch of people signed up against it, but I can't get them to explain why.
All right. Well, nothing is more frustrating for the loved ones of people who they have people in nursing homes, and then there are these complaints against nursing homes. Generally speaking, how do we do in Arizona when it comes to nursing home complaints, Will Humble?
Well, it was honestly tragic between 2018 and 2022. What the Arizona Auditor General uncovered back in 2019 was that the state health department, who regulates nursing homes, was simply not following up on complaints that came in from the general public, they weren't doing their job. And when the auditor general called them out in the 2019 report, the state agency, Director Kara Christ was in charge at the time, they wrote back to the auditor general saying, "We don't agree with your findings, and we're not going to fix anything," basically told him to pound sand. And nothing, honestly, nothing was corrected. The auditor general came back in 2021 and looked to see what kind of corrections were made and discovered nothing had been done in 2 years to fix the problem, and wrote them up again. And in 2022 released a report, and this is going to blow you away, Bill, and your listeners, but the state health department, instead of correcting the problem and going out on high risk complaints that really put patients at risk, instead of following them up on those investigations, they reclassified 98% of the high risk complaints as low risk, giving
what?
So that instead of going out there in 10 days, they have to go out there within 1 year, and then wrote back to the auditor saying, "We fixed the problem." Well, they just completely swept it under the rug. In my opinion, it's definitely gross unprofessional conduct, if not criminal misconduct, in my opinion.
What are we talking about? How serious are some of these complaints? What type of things are we talking about, Will?
Like making mistakes on a patient's medication, what the medicines they're supposed to take and when.
Wow.
Pressure ulcers, not moving patients frequently enough so that they get just terrible pressure ulcers that get infected, not changing people so that they get skin infections. I mean, the list goes on and on. Now, recently, under this new administration, a bunch of people, as you know, Director Crist with the Blue Cross Blue Shield and Colby Bauer, who was the assistant director in charge of licensing, is also at Blue Cross now. And so, you know, the people who made those decisions to not only fix the problem, but to try to hide the problem from the auditors are gone. And the new people at the agency are honestly, I'm in their building right now. And I just came from a stakeholder meeting where they were just totally open and honest and transparent about the issues during the previous administration, not protecting the health and safety of nursing home residents. And they have a list of things that they're working on. And it's the first time I've seen them not be defensive in many years. Now, they're not going to be able to fix this problem immediately because they still have to hire and recruit people to go out and do these, the complaint investigations. And you need to be a registered nurse for a lot of that work. And so, but at least the first step in getting better, both personally or professionally, is recognizing that you have a problem. And then you build a plan to fix the problem. And those things are underway. I don't expect the problems in nursing homes, the regulation of nursing homes, to be solved immediately. But I am now finally confident for the first time in many years that we're on the right track.
Well, I hope something does get done about that, because it's very frustrating, I'm sure, for people who have loved ones in nursing homes. They want, obviously, the best care possible. But this is a huge issue, and we'll keep watching it. Let's talk a little bit about, we haven't talked about COVID. What would our monthly session be with Will Humble without talking about COVID? I mean, we are in the fourth year of this. Hard to believe, but on and on it goes. And now there's apparently a fast spreading new COVID-19 subvariant. It's called XBB, and it's part of what is being called a new class of Omicron. What do you make of that?
Well, number one, this virus is going to be with humanity forever. I mean, it's not going to go away. Over time, it has become less lethal, much less lethal, actually, both because of the immune protection that people now have, but the virus itself is becoming less lethal over time. But it's also becoming and has continued to become more and more contagious over time. And this new version is a lot more contagious, but I just want listeners to know it doesn't mean that it's, more lethal. In fact, it's, it's just like the other Omicron that came on the scene a year and a half ago. So I don't know. The only real take-home message for everybody out there is to get your booster shot when you go to your primary care doc. And other than that, live your life.
There's still a lot of COVID out there, and we hear about it a lot. I'm sure everybody does that's listening to this program. I mean, it's certainly out there in the community, but hopefully if it's the second and even third time around, the case isn't as severe, I guess, if you've been boosted. Can we make that generalization, Will Humble?
Yes, for sure. And with each infection you get. I mean, that's the other thing, too, is, your immune system builds protection and you can get reinfected. And that's happened to a lot of people. But if you get your booster shot, and all the booster shots are now just focused on this new Omicron strain. All the old shots that were based on the original ancestral strain are not in the supply chain anymore. So everything that's out there in the community now, whether it's a doctor's office or pharmacy, is the new vaccine that's focused on Omicron, including XBB, the one we're talking about.
There are people that are still very cautious, going out sparingly. That's an issue for the loneliness issue comes into play, Will.
Well, for sure. I mean, loneliness is a huge public health issue. You know,
yes.
That if social isolation is a bad thing for people's mental health, and your mental health is connected to your physical health. So, reaching out to people in your neighborhood or family members that you haven't seen for a while is something that might really help them and probably help you too.
Any thoughts, Will, as we continue to search for the the cause of COVID-19. I know it seems to be there's really no definite consensus, is there, about where it came from?
No, and I don't think we're going to ever find out, to be honest. And the reason is that, well, there was a phase one study with the World Health Organization and others that did an initial investigation in China, and they had some actual access to the Wuhan facility and that the area where those initial cases showed up. That study concluded that most likely it was a zoonotic source. In other words, not man-made, but rather, came out of the wet market or other animals in that part of China. But that study was not conclusive, and they needed a phase two study to really dive into the details. But the Chinese government has withdrawn their cooperation and is not allowing that investigation to happen. And so unless they change their mind, I don't think that researchers will ever be able to get the kind of access that they need to make a firm determination about whether this was man-made or the most likely scenario at this point is that it was from a biological source.
Okay, well, we got to run. People can follow you. What's the blog?
AZPHA.org, and it's called Will's Blog.
All right, Will, have a great afternoon. Thank you, sir.
All right, take care. Bye.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back, Buckmaster, on the final day of May 2023. It's our midweek edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Speaking of green things, We did have a moderately cool, I think we can say that, no 100 degree days in May. So that means the plants loved it. So I think they loved it. I don't speak plant talk. I can only judge by what I see in my own backyard garden, and the plants are very happy. One reason might be because they were grown over at Green Things. Green Things, what a great job they do on their 13-acre site. Everything you need for the garden, 3384 East River Road. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. The sister business doing very well, Zocalo Village. Wonderful Talavera pottery, beautiful imported, some of them imported. There are some mesquite wood kitchen sets and tables that are made right here in Tucson at Zocalo Village. Their website, zocalovillage.com. When we do our telephonic interviews, of which today is a telephone day, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Dr. Gabriel Trujillo. Dr. Trujillo, the superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District. Dr. Trujillo, how are you?
Hello, Bill. I'm doing very, very well. Hoping that everybody out there had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. And of course, took some time during that holiday to reflect on the sacrifice that so many have made to make sure that we enjoy the freedoms that we have here today. And I do apologize for not being in studio. I'm actually going to be in Mesa for the next couple of days at a school improvement conference, but nevertheless, still happy to be here on the show.
Well, the next visit, hopefully, we will have you here in the show, but we do have a lot of ground to cover. What is your assessment of school year 22-23 that has wrapped up? How would you characterize this school year for Tucson Unified?
Well, I think we would characterize the year that was as a year of unprecedented staffing shortages and challenges across the district. It was a year that was characterized by a pronounced teacher shortage in the area of special education with students with disabilities. It was a year that saw a struggle to get enough substitutes to cover a lot of our existing vacancies. And I think that was definitely one of the biggest challenges this year. It also was a year of pronounced academic improvement across the Tucson Unified School District. It was a year that saw schools returning to success, returning to progress in student achievement with an unprecedented amount of A and B schools across the district receiving their letter grades in the fall, a reflection of the great work that was done during the spring testing season of 22. And lastly, I think that the 22-23 school year that has just wrapped, I think has also been the year of the performance arts. It was a year that saw an unprecedented investment by the district in the arts, investing in fine performance and visual arts teachers and programs throughout the district. And so we're certainly looking forward to 23-24. But certainly 22-23 brought challenges, and it also brought some successes for us.
What about lessening the middle school learning gaps? Have we made some progress there, Dr. Trujillo?
Unfortunately, not as much as we would have liked. You know, we are looking at, our governing board is considering possibly going out for a bond coming up here in a few weeks. And part of that will be dealing with some of the facilities issues that may allow us to pursue some large-scale middle school reform. We know that grades 6, 7, and 8, we know that we are struggling at those grade levels, particularly in our standalone middle schools. And we've been looking a lot at some K-8 districts and how the district performed several decades ago when it was, by and large, a K-8 district. And we do see some bright spots when kids can stay at their local elementary schools a little bit longer and take advantage of the smaller learning communities and relationships, as opposed to navigating these very, very large middle schools where they're having to deal with a lot of issues that aren't present in their elementary school. So dealing with some of the spatial capacity, I think, is going to help us, hopefully, if a bond effort is called for by the board to deal, to take on a lot of the middle school reform.
The bond effort is sometime, there is an underlying kind of current that it becomes almost a referendum, Dr. Trujillo, doesn't it? That some voters look at it and say, how is Tucson Unified doing?
I think so, but I think that, and certainly some of the polling that we've done, I think that that's there. But I also think that the underfunding of public schools is just such a concern in this community that regardless of whether a voter thinks that TUSD is doing a good job educating kids, I think that that's a separate opinion from whether or not kids deserve a working heating and cooling system in a building, or whether or not kids deserve a roof that is functional, or kids deserve classroom furniture that isn't from the 1950s. You know, so from some of the polling that we've seen, it appears that the electorate can think both things at the same time. We've certainly seen some polling data that doesn't express the highest amount of confidence in the district and its ability to educate kids, but at the same time acknowledges that this district has been historically underfunded by the state and ultimately does need some kind of a bond to deal with the facilities issues that confront us.
When was the last bond issue put forth in the district?
The last bond effort was put forth in 2017. It was not successful, and it was not successful for a variety of reasons. You know, we can certainly go back and reflect on that time. The district was certainly struggling with turnover at the superintendent's position. You had a board that was very publicly in a state of conflict with itself, with different members going to different media outlets about each other, and just a really negative narrative about the district, still mired in a court case, still under court supervision, still dealing with some very public student disciplinary issues, and then, of course, a very ugly and public firing of the superintendent. I think all of that contributed to just a really, really lackluster campaign effort. I do think the narrative is a little different now. There's a lot more stability in the district. And I think in the summer of 2023, what wasn't evident in the fall of 2017 is almost sort of a universal acknowledgement that it's important that no school in Tucson become the next Uvalde, and that infrastructure is needed, regardless of one's opinion of how well schools are doing. Schools do need better fencing, better gating, better security measures. And that's largely what we've been asking folks about, is a package that is aimed at safety and security infrastructure, which seems to be resonating well with those that we've polled.
When we talked a couple of months ago, we talked about an effort at the state legislature. There were some very I viewed them as negative toward public education. When you look at the budget package that was signed into law by Governor Hobbs a couple of weeks ago while I was out of the country on vacation, as I look over this, a lot of that negative did not appear in the budget, did it?
You know, thankfully, Bill, no, it didn't. And, you know, I'll just give you some numbers, you know, from what it means for TUSD. Obviously, the biggest news in the K-12 education package signed by Governor Hobbs is the one-time investment of $300 million into K-12 schools across the state. What's TUSD's cut? What's TUSD's slice of the pie? It's going to be about $26 million in new funds coming into the district. So it's going to give us a little bit more of an opportunity to deal with not just the yearly obligation we have to compete with teacher salaries, that's not cheap, but also to be able to take care of the facilities issues that are staring at us right now. We're heading into the peak of the cooling season. We've got a lot of concerns about HVAC systems and air conditioning units across the district that need some attention. So it was definitely a very, very welcome addition to our district budget.
So you're going to get some influx, I think you said $26 million, but what about loss of revenue from the federal government and the pandemic side of things?
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate side of the house. You never like to see funding sources expire, but this is the final year that we will be receiving, or the final year that we have to spend these federal dollars that came to the district through the emergency elementary secondary school economic recovery fund known as ESSER. We have one more year of these dollars funding key academic positions throughout the district. And then those positions will no longer have this funding source at the end of the 23-24 school year. And we're currently working to identify alternative funding sources so these positions can remain at the schools. I mean, we're talking about reading interventionists, math interventionists that are on the ground working with students struggling in math and reading. We certainly want to keep these resources in the schools, and we're going to be working hard to make sure that they continue to be funded even after the federal funding dries up this year.
After, there was the highly publicized hacker attack on the district. That was one of the very unpleasant moments, I know, for you, Dr. Trujillo, and your team in school year 22-23. Lessons learned from this, kind of hardening up security on the computer side?
I think when we came through this, I think there were three really, really big lessons. Number one, you cannot really put on the back shelf. You cannot afford not to prioritize information technology infrastructure. It's like a building. It's like a school building, but virtually. It is your network protection. It's your network barrier that prevents attacks. And we learned that through the years, information technology infrastructure, high-quality firewalls, high-quality security measures, cutting-edge industry-leading security steps that you take to protect data wasn't necessarily prioritized in our district because we just weren't aware of how vulnerable we could be. But that is a priority now, and it's not cheap. Like most things, it's going to cost money. It's going to cut into the district's budget. But the security of our employees and our families' data, that is priceless, and we're going to pay any price that we need to make sure that this doesn't happen again. I think lesson number two is there is so much riding on individual employee behavior. We need to do a better job teaching our employees and training them on best practices digitally, not to open strange emails, not to open up what does a phishing email look like, why it's not a good idea to save your personal information to your desktop. So really, really easy things that if every single employee engages in good data hygiene, we can protect ourselves from these types of attacks. And I think the third thing is we really need to start having conversations about a balance between individual student and employee freedoms to bring their own devices to our campuses and the need to maintain security. It's hard to maintain security when thousands of people are bringing their own iPads and their own computers and connecting into the district's network. So we've got to have some tough conversations about what's the meeting point between the autonomy that we want to give our staff and our students to bring devices and our obligation to maintain a safe and secure network. We're not talking about a banning of personal devices, but we kind of have to figure that out. So I think those were our three big learnings.
All right, we're going to pause right here. More with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, who heads up Tucson Unified. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Nice day. Midday temperature 77 over in Silver City. So the 10-degree rule is now very much, Tom's laughing, but it is. It's the 10-degree, minus 10, usually 10 degrees or more cooler in Silver City than Tucson in the summertime. And that's because the elevation. We're less than 3,000 feet here in Tucson. I think about 2,500. If you're up in the kind of the northern part of the foothills, maybe close to 3,000 foot elevation. But Silver City is anywhere from about 5,000 to 6,000. So it's going to be cooler because it's a higher elevation. Start your planning now by going to southwestnewmexico.org. Only about a three-hour drive to Silver City. Lots to do, all sorts of ideas at the website. Things to do, places to stay, great places to eat as well. It's a great weekend or maybe even midweek getaway for you to just hop in the car, truck, or jump on the motorcycle and head east. Take a left at Lordsburg and then head up to Silver City. All right, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We continue our conversation with Tucson Unified School Superintendent Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, who is attending a school conference up in Mesa. Is this involving all of the school districts in the state?
Yeah, there are several school districts represented coming together in Mesa. So it's a great opportunity. You know, summer is kind of conference season. That's where, as a superintendent, you can break away a little bit more and not have to worry about missing key situations that may happen during the school year when all the schools are open.
I think it's worth noting a year ago, almost to the day, that Tucson Unified, the board, gained full control as the desegregation case closes. This is a case that went on for nearly a half a century, Dr. Trujillo.
No, absolutely. And the singular focus for us in this first year out of court supervision is a full-scale revision of the district's disciplinary policies, known as the Code of Conduct. We're rounding the corner on this process. It's been a tremendously collaborative process with almost 10,000 families, parents, staff members, teachers, administrators weighing in via survey or focus group or serving on one of our committees. And we're excited. You know, this is probably the most important first step in this new age of local governance, free of court supervision, to really return control of our classrooms back to our teachers, while at the same time maintaining our commitment to teaching kids positive behaviors and keeping them in school. But I think the most common critique and some legitimate concerns with the current code of conduct was its permissiveness. It in its intention to support students through interventions, it became permissive of a lot of really disruptive behaviors that ultimately contributed to situations where teachers felt like they had lost control or a level of respect in leading their classroom. So we're excited about an opportunity to rewrite it, overhaul it, and support our teachers.
I didn't realize that case, the DSEG case, was so tied to disciplinary procedures.
Yeah, student discipline was actually a central tenet.
Really?
Of the court order. Yeah, the court order that was imposed upon the district, one of its major requirements was the development of a student code of conduct that was intervention-based, that was focused on restorative practices in terms of the reparation of relationships between teachers and students during times of conflict or during times of disruption, and a philosophy that interventions, student interventions on the part of teachers and educators should always come before consequences in any given situation. As a school administrator, I had always opposed that singular philosophy. Having served in schools, I had always been very vocal that in a lot of situations that are so openly disruptive and at times violent, there is no need for an intervention. There is a need for instant accountability. There is a need for, at times, a classroom removal when issues become volatile or heated or sometimes violent. And that was always the debate between the district and the court. And that debate is now over. So we are now free to pursue these revisions that we believe are going to bring more safety and security to the district and still maintain our commitment to working with our students and teaching them better behaviors and better control.
All right. We've got the summer break for you, but really there is no break when you head up a school district the size of Tucson Unified with a portfolio of, let me see, 77 schools. Is that correct?
We're actually 86.
Oh, 86 in your portfolio. Wow.
86 in the portfolio, and it is a busy summer. Just a little bit of a plug for the public who's listening. June 13th, big meeting. The governing board will be voting to adopt a new disciplinary policy, which we've been working hard on. So come on out or watch us on the live stream. That is a big discussion. We'll also be voting on the district's proposed budget. The district's budget usually sparks a lot of community participation. We welcome that. We welcome the feedback. And then also on June 13th, the governing board will be taking up the biggest question of all, whether or not it will be calling for an election to deal with the hundreds of millions of dollars of facilities needs that we have in the district. So there's a lot to be decided on June 13th, Bill.
Wow. And I looked at my schedule. I've got Jennifer Ekstrom on the show Wednesday the 14th. So that's appropriate, right?
You probably will spend the hour or the 30 minutes with Jennifer just talking about
the meeting.
Is she going to be ready for you?
Yeah.
How's she going to you know, what are her thoughts on those three giant items coming up at her on the 13th?
Good timing. Anyway, have a great summer. We'll catch up with you midway through the summer. Thanks, Dr. Trujillo.
Take care, Bill. We'll see you next time in studio.